This episode of Bossible Podcast is sponsored by Evervest. Years ago, when I started my monthly savings, I spent months delving into the topic. Understanding and comparing all the different investment options was a huge effort. I read books, did some internet research, met with several investment advisors, and eventually decided to go with passive index funds. I wish Evervest had existed back then, because they basically do all this for you. Evervest uses algorithms and expert knowledge to build an investment portfolio that matches your goals and then helps you monitor and adjust your portfolio as needed. Evervest helps you focus on your other goals with the peace of mind that your long-term investments are taken care of. It's easy to get overwhelmed with this stuff, but the most important part of an investment plan is that you have one. Getting started is hard, but Evervest has made that very easy for you. As a Boss Level listener, you'll get your first 3 months free if you sign up at evervest.com/bosslevel. So 3 months free if you sign up at evervest.com/bosslevel. Now is a good time to start. In this episode, I'm interviewing Joshua Spodek. He teaches leadership at the New York University, has a PhD in astrophysics, and does burpees every day. I think that's a pretty amazing one-line description for anyone. His book, Leadership Step by Step, will be released in a couple of weeks. We talk about his principles for getting things done, his routines, his views on leadership, and we do a 5-minute walkthrough of his book. We end the interview with some empathy and book recommendations. Before we get into the episode, I have a small perk for Boss Level listeners. My extended family at Reactor is bringing Stanley McChrystal to Helsinki. McChrystal is a retired U.S. Army general who authored the book Team of Teams. In the book, he explains how to create an organization that thrives in a complex environment. McChrystal is going to be in Helsinki on the 9th of February. If you want a chance to get an invite to the event, email leadershipupdate@reactor.com. That's leadershipupdate, one word, @reactor.com, and mention that you heard about the event on the Boss Level podcast. Hope to see you there. Okay, now let's get to the interview.
My name is Joshua Spodek, and there's a couple things I do. I mean, I've been teaching leadership, entrepreneurship, sales, and, you know, the kind of soft skills of business at NYU. It looks like next semester I'll be doing it at Columbia. I've also created online courses that are the online version, so you don't have to be a student at one of these universities to take them. And actually, my book is coming out in a couple weeks now, so I've been working on that for a little over a year of just the writing part. And then if you look at what I do, other things, I'm really into, I guess you could call it personal development, professional development. And I do lots of things fitness related, like running marathons and doing burpees every day. I write a lot. So lots of different things.
Yeah, actually, I have to admit that like I laughed out loud when I was reading through your bio on your website because it's just like so ridiculously magnificent. So you have several degrees, like including a PhD in astrophysics and an MBA. You've ran several companies and on top of that, all the marathons and so on, just to pick a few of the crazy things you've done.
I'll tell you one thing I've never done is I haven't climbed the corporate ladder from bottom to the C-suite of like the corporate life I've never done. I worked at a friend's company that was acquired by a Fortune 100 company. And so for a little while, I did work at a big, you know, what do you call it? Like a multinational company. And it wasn't my style.
Obviously, you get a lot of stuff done. And let's talk a little about that. Like, so what are your most important principles for getting stuff done?
You know, I'm really glad you started with that question of like, what's the important principles and talking about importance and value, because to me, the most important thing in getting things done is to know what's important. And I think a lot of people don't get that. They don't know how to distinguish or how to evaluate what's important and what's not important. And so they do what's in front of them. David Allen and the book Getting Things Done have been very influential for me here. And I met him. People had been telling me about his book for a while. And I was at Marshall Goldsmith had a book release event, and I'm just talking to this guy, and we're just talking, and he says his name is David Allen, and I don't really think about it. I go, so, you know, what have you done? And he says, well, I wrote this book, Getting Things Done. I go, oh my God, everyone's been telling me to read it, but I don't think I really need to read it because I know my values and I do what's important and I get things done appropriately, you know, maybe not perfectly, but pretty well. And he says, what he said stuck with me really well. And I'm really glad he said the next thing to me. He said, we market the book as a personal productivity book, but it's really about freedom. He said, it's about freeing your mind from stuff that's not important in order for you to focus on what is important. And then I read the book and I realized, like, this is really valuable because, you know, as he puts it, if your mind is trying to keep track of things, it's not very effective at that. You know, if you have two things in your head, it's like you're trying to juggle them. You can't focus on what's in front of you. And if you have a system to get things out of your head, so they're stored in a system where you know that they'll remind you when you need them to, and you'll all the different things in GTD, it really gives you a lot of freedom. So that's, I was pretty good before that. But then after reading his book and putting that stuff into practice, and I don't do it like 100%, but I think I do it pretty well, that brought things up to another level. So that's one thing. Anything that is automatic or anything that can be automatic, I try to make automatic. So I have certain habits that I do every day without fail. I mean, if you look me up, you'll see that I've done burpees every day for, I'm now in my seventh year, I believe, and I do not miss them. And that takes me, it means that I never have to worry about exercise or like, am I in shape or so forth. It's something that's a part of my day. And it's not just exercise. I mean, exercise is one part of it. I was just talking to someone about this recently. I've never finished a set of burpees in a bad mood. And that means that roughly every 12 hours, or I guess I'm awake 16 hours a day. So every 8 hours, roughly, I get not in a bad mood. And that's a tremendously effective thing. In fact, there have been times in the past 6 years when I've been in a bad mood and I'm like, oh, I want to stay in this bad mood because, you know, sometimes you want to dwell in your misery. And I think to myself, crap, I'm gonna do some burpees pretty soon. It's gonna get my heart pumping. I'm gonna be in a good mood, but I don't want to be in a good mood. I want to be in a really bad mood because I feel so miserable. You know that feeling of like all those people who think they're happy. They just think they're happy. They're not. This is how life really is. And then I do the burpees and I'm done. I'm like, oh, I feel great. So in the past 6-7 years, I've always reset. I've never gotten in a really bad mood in all that time. I mean, it's never gotten worse than it can get in like 8 hours.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about like you or anyone else doing angry burpees, trying to stay angry while doing burpees.
It's hard. Yeah, I mean, you really have to focus. I do 26 sets of 26 now, and whatever's in your head before, it's not in your head after. I mean, you're basically focused on, it's meditative. You know, it's like you're focused on thinking, your body, your form, things like that.
So you actually have a book coming out in February, and it's called Leadership Step by Step. So first, what's your writing process been like?
The actual physical writing is a relatively small part of the whole process. I mean, the leadership stuff, if you really trace it back to its roots, probably would be about 20 years ago when I first was starting to leave academia and was starting my first company. And, you know, it was my idea. There was a co-founder and we were 50-50 at the beginning. I was CEO, he was president, but that was my first leadership role. And I can tell you, looking back, I was very proud. I wouldn't have described myself arrogant at the time, but there was a lot of arrogance in there. And then I started business school and I found out in business school that there were classes in leadership. And that's when I learned more technique. But really I learned that you could learn leadership. And then since business school, the first 5 years after business school is when I was like studying everything I could of learning everything about leadership. And people would tell me that I should share what I learned because they could see that I had changed and that relationships and emotional awareness and emotional skills had become more important to me. And they were telling me that I should teach this stuff and I should write. And so I started writing then, and it wasn't effective. It was the seminars that I would do, I was really just lecturing. And lecturing is not an effective way to get people to change their behavior. And so the past 5 years is when things really started clicking, that I started realizing that how you teach is as important, at least in leadership and active fields, as what you teach. And so I would say really in the past 5 years is when I started realizing there's something different that I'm not aware of anyone else doing in how to teach leadership. The stuff that when I took classes that were lecture and case study, reading papers, writing papers, I was learning something for sure, but mainly what I was learning about leadership. But what I really wanted and what I needed was to learn how to lead. And knowing about something, knowing about a piano is not the same as knowing how to play piano. Knowing about basketball is not knowing how to play basketball. And so that's when the really in earnest, I started learning techniques that work to teach people in fields that are active, social, emotional, expressive, performance-based. Then there's a process of writing a book proposal, which itself was like 45 pages. So a friend introduced me to a woman who became my book agent, and she walked me through the process. And that was a major step forward of working with someone who's a professional. She's not a professional editor, but she definitely knew how to bring out the writing that would be effective, that would help other people. Because I was like, do this, do that. And she was like, Josh, you got to tell some stories and show, don't tell, and things like this. And so getting a professional, I'll call her a professional editor. I mean, she's an agent, but she was basically an editor at the time. That helped a lot. Before we wrote the proposal, or writing the proposal, broke it down into 4 units and all the different exercises that would go in each unit. So the writing was more methodical. It was like I'd sit down and I'd say, okay, this week I'm going to write this chapter.
And I think your book is very heavily based on the exercises. So instead of people just reading through it, they're supposed to stop and actually do things and get insights from the exercises.
I'm sure a lot of people have experiences where you feel like you're very well prepared for something, and then you feel like, oh, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And then you walk into the situation, you forget what you said, and the stress of the situation makes it complicated to do. When you're in stressful situations, what works is to fall back on experiences that worked in the past. And what I found is that if you give people experiences that they can learn from, then when they go into difficult situations, they fall back on what they did in the past, and then they can more successfully do things.
One of the things when I read books on leadership, one of the things that often annoys me is that how they emphasize the leader and the act of leading so much, when I think that one of the most important qualities of a leader is the ability to kind of get out of the way and let others flourish and let others take the leadership. I kind of feel that like the leader is always talked about and like as a centerpiece. And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that I think the big thing happening here is that effective leadership doesn't really look good on TV, and it doesn't sell books. It doesn't sell magazines. And so what you see is dramatic. Like any movie with Tommy Lee Jones in it, there's going to be a scene where he's like, okay, everyone, we're going to catch this criminal. You go do this and you do that, set up a perimeter 10 miles and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it's like really dramatic and it looks really cool. And they're all like, yes, sir. But the only way for that to work is, you know, people don't like being ordered around, just being told what to do so blatantly. So if something like that were to work, it has to fall back on a long period of that leader developing relationships with people and understanding what makes them tick and what works and what doesn't work with everyone. By contrast, I'm friends with the guy who, he was the global CEO of Deloitte. And I brought one of my classes to go see him in the global leadership suite of Deloitte, which is in Rockefeller Center in Manhattan. And I pointed out to the class, what you guys see would never be on a reality TV show, but it's actually how things get done. He was very successful and he's a very calm guy. Like avuncular is the word that I think of. And he gets things done, but he's not like you're fired or, you know, it's not like Shark Tank and stuff like that.
So getting back to the book. So the book is divided into 4 units. So understanding yourself, leading yourself, understanding others, and leading others. So I'd actually like to briefly walk through them to try to kind of squeeze out the most important stuff. What are your most important insights about understanding yourself, the first part of the book?
So understanding yourself is about self-awareness, and it's about what seem like very simple things, but perception. It's literally like how you perceive things through your senses. That's how you see the world. I mean, that's how you know about the world, is through your senses. And then you have your beliefs, and your beliefs influence your perception. So you and I can be in the same room looking at the same thing, but if we have different backgrounds that let us have different beliefs about the world, we're going to behave differently. 2 people perceive the same thing different ways based on different models. And so the exercises in that unit are to get you seeing how you perceive the world, how your perceptions are influenced by your beliefs, how different people are, and how different people see different beliefs differently.
The next unit is about leading yourself. So what are the key lessons there?
So leading yourself is to change your beliefs. If you have different beliefs, it's going to lead to different emotions and motivations. And that's a big part of leading yourself. You know, it's not just like having an iron will and willpower. That doesn't work on long time scales. It doesn't work for a lot of things. Changing your beliefs so that you behave in ways that are effective in the long term. Like, so changing beliefs is one of them. There's another exercise in there called your authentic voice, which is to speak more authentically. And this is one that like, I love this exercise because when I assign it, people are all, you imagine a classroom full of people and they're all like, oh my God, you're asking me to speak without a filter. I'm going to like tell my best friend that I hate her or hate him. I'm going to, you know, insult my mom because they're afraid of what they're going to say. And, you know, the exercise walks you through how to do things simply and builds up. So I'm not just throwing them out to the wolves. And they come back the next week and they're like, oh my God, I didn't realize I could say the things that I did. And I had these, I spoke so genuinely. And then people responded to me genuinely, and I didn't realize I could do that. So that's then there's an exercise in there from Marshall Goldsmith, which is on how to get advice from people in a way that makes relationships stronger, called Feed Forward. And so it's a lot about changing, developing your voice, changing your habits, changing your beliefs, leading yourself.
Okay, moving forward. So we've covered understanding yourself, leading yourself. So the next unit is about understanding others. So how do we do that?
There's certain commonalities to virtually everybody. I mean, there are edge cases, but there's edge cases to everything. So for most of the people that you work with, they're going to have a very similar emotional system. And it's systematic that a lot of people, certainly myself growing up, I thought, okay, there's reason and there's emotions. And reason is rational. It's systematic. So emotions must be unsystematic. And a lot of our culture reinforces that. You know, it's like you fall in love when Cupid's arrow strikes you, or you feel inspired when the muse whispers in your ear, and it's attributing all these motivations to outside influences. So that's really nice if you want to make a painting or do artistic stuff. But if you want to lead people, believing that your emotions are unpredictable is counterproductive. And I think that what makes people think that the emotional system is not systematic is that you and I might walk into the same situation and behave differently. That makes me think, oh, your system is just different than mine. But I think it's more that we have different backgrounds. And if you knew all of my history and all of the beliefs that led up to and all of my abilities, then you would be able to predict my behavior much better.
After we've learned to understand ourselves better, we've learned to lead ourselves better, we've started to understand others better, how do we start leading others?
You become a leader because you start recognizing what motivates people and to connect that motivation to what needs to be done. And then you start seeing people working harder than they ever had before. They start doing it not because of you, but for themselves. And they start, you can look at someone, you can see them, the emotion on their face is just like, finally, I can do what I've always wanted to do for the reasons I've always wanted to.
What's the one thing that you hope your book or your work in general could help change in the world?
I envision a world in which people develop empathy predictably, reliably, consistently. And I think of a world in which everyone is a little bit more empathetic, or maybe a lot more empathetic. Think of the Middle East and everyone there caring a little bit more about everybody else around them. That's, to me, an outcome that I would very much like to have. It makes their life better. It enables them to create meaning and value and purpose and importance in their own life and in the lives of people around them. And the side effect is that they're connected with all of the people in their community more, and they're able to listen and feel comfortable with people more. Even more fundamental than having the empathy is having the ability to create it.
What's a book or two that you feel that everyone should read, or like, do you have people who you feel have had a huge impact on the person that you are today?
The go-to ones that I go to are Man's Search for Meaning and Diving Bell and the Butterfly. And both of these books are about people who were thrust into situations that they didn't ask for, and they shone like beyond what anybody would have expected. I mean, in Man's Search for Meaning, a man lived in Auschwitz. you know, in a concentration camp, a death camp that run by the Nazis. And in Diving Bell and the Butterfly, a man had a stroke that left him with the ability in the end to all he could, the only voluntary control he had over his body was his left eyelid. And both of them ended up writing these books that were told about their experiences that were like, they were full of meaning, full of emotional reward, even though no one would ask to be in a situation like that. And I think the big lesson that I take away from these books is not that these people were special or had special abilities, or that these situations that they were put in created something in them that they didn't have otherwise. It's that they're just like you and me, and that these situations that they led them to reveal what was already there. And that tells me that you and I, everybody, has the ability to reach the greatness that they did. And I don't mean greatness like sell millions of books. I mean to have a view of life that to find as much meaning and passion and emotional reward and happiness that they want in their life. Like you and I have the ability to do it that they did. And I think I'm not them, so I'm not sure, but I think what they'd like to leave the world knowing is that you don't need Auschwitz or stroke to bring these things out. You have the ability to be just as happy as they were. You have it. You just have to use it.
Josh's book is going to be available on Amazon in a couple of weeks. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes. If you like this episode or like the podcast in general, you can help me make it by sharing the episodes or by writing a positive review on iTunes. Any help in growing the podcast audience is appreciated. Next episode is due in 2 weeks, so talk to you then. Bye.